This is Barbara Glickstein with Health Cetera. Earlier than 2000, I watched a documentary. It was a short documentary. I believe it was Human Rights Documentary Series. And it was a film about made by a young woman, a New York City resident, who had to sit in the saved for a disabled person seat. And as a young woman without a physically visible problem, spoke about how often people would tell her to get up, that that's for somebody else. And it blew my mind that it was something probably I've thought if I didn't even say it when I saw someone who didn't look physically in trouble to have to take that seat. And then again in 2015, so that already shifted my understanding of my bias. And then in 2015, because of work that I do in documentary film, a woman by the name of Jennifer Bria called me, and she was making a documentary about her life. She was a doctoral student at Harvard University, and she had a fever that left her bedridden. And at the time, physicians just kept telling her, as women too often hear, quote, "It's all in your head." In 2018, Jennifer Bria's film, Unrest, won the Sundance Award-winning film documentary. The film is still available to watch online for those of you who might be interested. And what she did was she turned the camera on herself and her community as she looked for answers to fight for a cure. She was ultimately diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. It's an incredibly powerful documentary. Today, after thinking more about this and having the opportunity to be personally introduced to Harper Spiro, I invited her to join us. Harper Spiro is a business coach, the founder of Made Visible. She is helping people living with invisible illness be seen and heard. And I'm going to direct you right away to make sure you write down her website, Harper, Harper, Spiro, one word, Spero.com. And I'm going to let her talk more about all the incredible information and beautiful design of your website, Harper. But I want to start our conversation by telling you that two words come to mind about you and about your work. The power of communication and agency when living with an invisible illness. So, welcome to Health Cetera, and thank you for taking the time to be with me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Barbara. What an introduction. Really got me thinking about my own experience in that disability section that I've experienced before. There was a time in 2012 when I went to go see the band Wilco at Red Rocks, and it was shortly after having a major surgery, which I'm sure we'll get to. And I knew that the altitude in Colorado would be an issue for me. So I had contacted the venue in advance because I have a lung condition and said, is it possible to sit in ADA seating? And I was assigned certain seats for one night, but it was sold out for the second night. And they told me to talk to the security guard on the second night. As you said, living with an invisible illness, not having anything that you could see. I was fine on the night that I had the ticket, but on the night when I didn't have a ticket, my friend and I went to the security guard and said, hey, we were here last night. We sat in the section last night. We were told to speak to you. And they completely disregarded me and didn't see anything visibly wrong with me. I looked like a 20-something year old who was just trying to get into the first row. And so my friend who was a doctor, actually, she was in med school at the time, she suggested we go to a different security guard and for me to lean my head on her shoulder and for her to sort of pet my head and sort of make it seem like I looked sick, whatever sick meant, and to show that I was visibly unwell, and that got us in. And I'll never forget it because as a huge music fan, it just felt like, okay, I get the concept of people, sneaking to the front row, but this was truly an experience where I had nothing to show for, and I've since gotten a letter from my doctor in case there is ever a situation like that.
You know, on your website, which really kudos to you and to your designer, I was very moved by the timeline and your communication in that way and in that fashion of addressing really the kinds of ways that you have revealed in your authenticity and who you are, and who I've learned more about you, who you are, that you've shared the stumbling blocks, your own and many people living with an invisible illness, attempts to trying to get over things that I think are very normal kinds of things to do, given a culture that we have where one has to prove by our visual that only visually do we accept someone who needs supportive or mitigating ways to help them be in the world. And so the timeline piece was really interesting. And I know you mentioned about having had some serious surgery. What other key points along your timeline is helpful for the listener to think about who may themselves be living with an invisible illness or someone they know and love is that would be a guide for them to think about how do I move to that next step? Because you really outline how it became evident to you what the next step was, even how the obstacle that you faced to do it.
Yeah, I think what's the obvious timeline in life is I started this job, I got married, I moved to this city, I bought a home, whatever those sort of huge milestones are. And when living with an invisible illness, you have to tackle so many small battles. And I think it's working backwards and thinking about, when did you find that doctor? When did you get that diagnosis? When did you start that drug? What are these different moments that changed your life in making it better, hopefully, in managing your invisible illness? And I think about my experience as a lot of my life is pre and post surgery. March 5th, 2012, changed my life when I had surgery. The months leading up to it were really intense, but that date was something that I will forever mark as when my life completely shifted. My mentality, my priorities, my values all shifted. So I think it's really thinking through what's important to you, what your values are, and how you map out, you know, your day to day. I am not big on major goals 5-10 years down the line. I'm very much about being present now. What can you tackle right now? And what's more manageable for you to deal with? Because especially in living with invisible illness, you have no idea what the future holds.
I have a number of women friends that have a range of different autoimmune diseases. And you're a younger woman and much younger than I am. And some of these friends have been living with these diseases since their 30s as well. And the way that you've just described the shifts are ones that as their close friends, I've noticed their shifts as well. And those around those who we love with an invisible illness can be the kind of supportive culture that we hope the rest of society starts to take on. So I'm moved by so much about what you've done and what you continue to do. And I think about this idea of inclusion. I think actually this week was disability, was one of the honorings of people living with disabilities. And so there are still so many significant barriers that persist that impede people living with an invisible disease and others to fully participate in society. And one of your businesses is to work with, you know, human resources and CEOs and others in leadership position to better understand it. And so give us some insight into that work.
Yeah, absolutely. So about 2 years ago, I was introduced to someone at UBS who was running the employee resource group there for chronic illness and disability. And I knew nothing about that world at the time, but realized how many people there are, as you said, living with invisible illnesses in the workplace who first of all are not forthcoming because they're afraid to be forthcoming. If they lose their job, they're not respected. They're not given as much work because people don't think they can handle it, whatever it may be. And also people just not feeling like they have the support that they need. So for some people with invisible illnesses, they may not need accommodations, but there are other people where certain chairs, certain lights, certain desk, environment and culture really has an impact on them. And a lot of people with invisible illnesses felt really seen and heard during the pandemic because they were working from home and they had the accommodations at home and were able to navigate things in a different way. So what I've been doing is I've been providing an experiential keynote session at companies where I share my story about invisible illness. And then I host a workshop and facilitate a workshop to help people write and share their stories. And so much of what happens in that room, virtually or in person, is people realizing how much they hold in and how much they don't disclose because they're nervous. And my goal is to create as safe of an environment as possible for people to feel that they can be themselves in these spaces. So the last one I did, there were 150 people in a virtual room. And when I said, put down 5 identifying details about you or share experiences that you've been through where you didn't feel seen, the chat was going wild. People had so much to share. And at the end of the session, all said they never shared this before. So many people that held this so close to them. And I spent the first 27 years of my life hiding, which is a huge part of my story. So for me, I really understand it. And I also am on the other side of seeing the value of sharing your story. I had a call with the head of a DEI department at a major, major company a few months ago who told me that 3 of their C-level employees had invisible illnesses and he was the only person in the company that knew about it. And I will never, ever forget it because it was such a moment of here's an opportunity to create a space for other people in this massive, massive company to feel supported, to have a boss or a manager or a colleague who gets it. But instead, these people are silently suffering and have team members that are likely silently suffering. So to me, I see the value of helping people to write and share their story, to get comfortable in the discomfort and start putting themselves out there in a way that makes them feel like they've got the support and the resources they need and also can be independent and do their job and still be a great employee.
You mentioned in your on your about page that writing was critical to your acceptance of your illness as well as who you are and how you want to be out in the world. And I think we hear a little bit more, maybe because we're both in a similar space in terms of health and well-being and being our full selves, of the power of storytelling. What moment in your storytelling was this sense of freedom to not only write in your private moments, but then to tell that story? What was that nexus moment of that, aha, I've been writing, and now I'm ready to like let the world know it. What was that moment like for you, Harper?
Yeah, so I think like I always was someone who journaled. And then in 2015, I took a class at the New School, Writing from Personal Experience. And it was an amazing class that opened the door to writing for me. And I started taking classes with this teacher in her home group. And I think for me, it was going on the internet, searching for invisible illness, chronic illness, my super rare disease, and not really finding anything that connected with me and deciding I need to start putting this out there because there's got to be someone else that feels as isolated as I do in having such a rare disease. And I have this vast friend network. I have an amazing family and support system, but I was lacking this community around invisible illness. And when I started sharing my story, I think my first piece was either on MindBodyGreen or Huffington Post. When I put it out there, the response was from strangers and people in my network and, you know, the girl that I didn't like in camp that bullied me that I haven't seen in 20 years, all going, wow, wow, wow. We had no idea what you were going through. Thank you so much for sharing. Your vulnerability is so important. And me realizing I was just being myself and that I had such a layer over myself for so many years, a protective coating that served no value for me then. I mean, clearly I did it, you know, protect it in a protective need then, but looking back, I'm like, wow, I feel so much better just being super authentically me, whether people like me or not.
I love that. I want to go back to the phone call that revealed that 3 people in the C-suite were living with an invisible illness. I don't want to drop that story because I want to know, and I think the listeners want to know, did they hire you to do some work with the company? They weren't ready?
They did not. No. Mm-hmm. It was one of those situations where I put together a proposal and I actually said, let's do a tailored package where I work with those three people to help them write and share their story. And then let's deal with the company on a wider scale. And unfortunately, no, I didn't hear back on moving forward with that. I think there's a level of fear on actually tackling this. And I have a lot of calls with companies where people are going, oh my God, this is incredible. I mean, I'm not to toot my own horn here, but 100% of my calls that I've had with companies have been fantastic. People saying this is so needed. We do a lot of work with disability. We do a lot of work with mental health. We've never tackled the invisible illness.
And they're doing that work maybe within their work environment, but organizations that are doing that work to support outside businesses to do this work are not looking internally about the people who work for them and with them. I also want to go back to the experience of people with all forms of illness and disability who have been fighting for positions within companies that were told, we can't accommodate you because of this. And that was blown open as being total baloney during COVID when everybody went home to work. What's your thoughts on that, Harper?
I think that people are unwilling to learn about others' differences. And I think people are not willing to find out what the possible accommodations could be that may not cost them a lot of money, that will make people feel nurtured and taken care of. And I think there's just a lack of education around this topic and people's unwillingness and just want an easy hire that's just going to slide in and fit within the demographic of the culture. So I think that if people are more willing to open their eyes, listen, ask questions, get curious, they'll see that there are a lot of people living with disabilities and invisible illnesses who are more than qualified to do the job that may need a little bit of an accommodation. I mean, before I started my business, I worked at a company where I took time off to go through medical leave and go through this major surgery. And ultimately, when I came back, my boss was like not having it when I wanted to do part-time. I just couldn't do full-time anymore. And I realized that like she was focused on the business. She was not focused on the culture and the people that were working within her business. And if people are willing to make that shift and get, you know, care more about what's happening internally, then they're going to have happier employees and better retention.
I think we have enough evidence for that, don't we? There's certainly a lot of business research that has proven that fact that you just said. Also, you know, I've been really thinking a lot since I've been prepping for this interview and for this conversation about where does this, some of these things start even without it, someone being identified and diagnosed with an invisible illness. I was thinking about children who say, I have a tummy ache. And what they really might be saying is, I don't want to go to school today. I need a time out, or I need some time away. Or, you know, and then we take their temperature. And, you know, since some families, the rule is you go to school if you don't have a fever. And I'm not condemning that parenting style. But I was thinking about how do we shift this culture of someone saying, I'm not feeling well today. We know that we're in a serious mental health epidemic in our country, you know, for across all ages, particularly our young people. And yet that doesn't seem to be enough of a statement of fact about knowing yourself and saying it, that the response is, well, you look okay. I mean, what? You woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and all kinds of ways that we in our culture, not all cultures and not all families, I want to make sure I make that clear. But I've been trying to think of, and I want to ask you, you are working to shift this culture and who you are and the work that you do, your business, your individual coaching, your business coaching, your corporate coaching, et cetera. What would you ask us who are listening here today to this conversation? How can we shift this culture?
I think it really is about curiosity and compassion. And I think it's willingness to ask people questions and get curious about what's going on with them. And I think it's you being vulnerable to start. So one of the examples that I like to share is Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert. One of the best things that he does is he gets vulnerable to get other people vulnerable. If you're willing to share, then people are willing to share too. That's what I talk about when I say creating a safe space and a safe environment in the corporate space of going, I'm going to bare my soul to you, tell you all of my challenges in hopes that you'll give me a little piece back. So if you can do that with people in your network, in your community, that could be really valuable. And the other component is the compassion one, which is so many people don't know what other people are going through. When you're walking down the street, someone looks fine and they don't look sick, they don't look like they have any ailments. You have no idea what's going on inside. So having a level of compassion, not knowing what a given person is, dealing with in the workplace, on the subway, wherever you may be, just recognizing that we're all going through stuff and we're living in a very crazy world, to say the least.
To say the least, exactly. So we have just a moment left, and you have addressed this question, but of course, you get the takeaway. So you spoke to all of us who, the other thing of, being a nurse for this long, many years and working in the space of policy and developing a better culture of healthcare is the them and us piece, right? We're all one day ahead of or behind of being the other person who we think is different than us, right? That's something you've already addressed. So, for those who are listening who might be living with this health situation of having an invisible illness, why don't you take the last couple of moments and talk to them?
I think what I have learned from my experience is what I try to share with the world. I am not here to dictate how people should live with invisible illness because everyone handles everything in their life, especially their health, differently. But what I have learned over the last few years in hosting my podcast, in working with companies, in coaching, and in managing my own invisible illness is really to just be yourself unapologetically. And I realize that when I try to accommodate other people or do things that are a little pushing my boundaries in a way that doesn't feel comfortable, I'm never happy and I regret doing that. So, for example, I'm someone who doesn't really like to take calls before noon. I don't sleep so well. I like the morning to take my time, catch up on emails, have some breakfast, just move at a slower pace, listening to podcasts. And when I take calls earlier than noon, I'm always mad at myself for it. So figure out what your boundaries are, where your limitations are. I just had a conversation with someone earlier today about the spoon theory, which is very popular in the chronic illness and invisible illness space, of how many spoons do you have per day? Let's say you have six spoons. What spoons are you going to use that are going to help you function throughout the day? And either take away your energy or give you energy. And each spoon can represent, taking a shower could be really hard for somebody. Meeting a friend and socializing could be really challenging. How many spoons do you have on a given day? And how many are you willing to use and exert your energy towards? And really just figure out what's best for you. Find your support system, whether that's friends, whether that's through social media, and finding people that are your care team, whether that's doctors, holistic people. I am a huge fan of creating some level of routine, even as an entrepreneur, that I have a team of people, acupuncture, therapy, yoga, that I know on each given day what works best for me to lean back on. And to your point of the pandemic, Barbara, is the concept of if you need a day to yourself, take a day to yourself. There needs to be more built-in mental health days because we all have those days where we're like the little kid that doesn't want to go to school. And it's important to listen to ourselves in those moments. I am such a gut feeling person. I can tell you deep in my gut, every single day, if I should or should not do something, because my gut is telling me what's right or wrong. And so, really staying true to you, if you go to a doctor and you don't have a good feeling about them, get a second opinion. Keep pushing forward. Don't accept no for an answer.
Harpa Spiro is a business coach and founder of Made Visible. She helps people living with invisible illness be seen and heard. Go to her website, Harper Spiro, HARPERSPERO.com. This is Barbara Glickstein. You've been listening to Health Cetera.